Hello, I'm Sharon Knight, and I'm going to be talking on Christian Astrology, the book written by William Lilly in the 17th century. Before considering William Lilly's masterpiece, we need to go back to the tumultuous events of the mid-17th century, during which time the first edition of Christian Astrology was published. Lilly was born in 1602 and grew up in an era when the divine right of kings was unquestioned. The divine right of kings asserted that only God could and would judge the actions of the monarch, and the monarch was above the laws of the common man. This all changed in England when civil war broke out in 1642, which lasted until the beheading of King Charles I, January 1649, and the establishment of the new Commonwealth under Oliver Cromwell and the Puritans. Although the Puritans did away with many religious festivals such as Christmas and Easter, and they advocated an austere lifestyle with pastimes such as going to the theatre or gambling being banned, they allowed opera, as that was thought to be virtuous. One great thing they did was to abolish the Star Chamber. The Star Chamber had been in existence for many hundreds of years, and it was, amongst other things, set up to monitor all publications that appeared in the country. If your face didn't fit, or a member of the council of the Star Chamber disliked your work, you could not get it published, and could even be put in prison for producing seditious material. With the abolition of the Star Chamber, England saw a huge flowering of works in written English, including Christian Astrology, and of course Nicholas Culpepper's lasting work, known as The English Physician or The Complete Herbal, which was published in 1652 and 53. Suddenly, knowledge that had previously only been available to the educated aristocracy was now within reach of the common man, everyone who could read English. This was much like the availability of knowledge to all today via the web. A whole new world was opened up, giving us all access to information that was previously undreamt of. As Lilly writes in his postscript to his catalogue of authors, which incidentally covers more than 220 listed publications, he says, "In a word, some may blame me that I write in the English tongue. Yet, I trust I have offended no man. First, I write in my own language, and to such as speak as I speak. Nor do I know that it is forbid unto man to write in his own language." Lilly finished Christian Astrology on the 1st of October, 1647, when it then appeared in print for the first time. So why the title Christian Astrology? We have to remember this was written and published during a period of intense scrutiny by the Puritans, who, if they felt something was, as we would perhaps today term it, occultic, it could be banned and the author imprisoned. Lilly wanted to show how astrology was fully compatible with Christian faith and doctrine. And in his letter to the student, he cautions the student to remain humble and not to neglect the hand of Almighty God. As he writes, "In the first place, consider and admire thy Creator and be thankful unto him. Be humble and let no natural knowledge, however profound and transcendent it may be, don't neglect divine providence, by whose all-seeing order and appointment all things heavenly and earthly have their constant motion. The more thy knowledge is enlarged, the more you should magnify the power and wisdom of Almighty God. The more holy thou art and more nearer to God, the more pure judgment thou shalt give." And he ends his letter, "God suffers no sin unpunished, no lie unrevenged." In All Manner of Questions on page 485, Lilly notes, "By the blessing of Almighty God, without whose providence we can perform no worthy act." And he continues, "The succeeding tract of nativities, wherein the pitiful and merciful God of all the faithful, whose brightness shines in our fragile understanding, assist me." Astrology was associated with magical practices, but the only reference to magic in Christian Astrology is when Lilly references how to discover if one is bewitched or not, and natural remedies against the witch or the curse, and this can be found on pages 464 to 466, with an example chart on page 468 and 69. The third part of Christian astrology is often overlooked, but it contains a wealth of information and techniques for predicting events in the native life using natal astrology. Many of these techniques, such as perfections, along with solar returns and directions, are only now being rediscovered. Obviously, we know about solar returns, but many people have found they're not that accurate. But when they're used in conjunction with perfections and directions, they do tell a remarkable story. So back to Lily. As he says to his letter to the reader at the beginning of Christian astrology, when he's talking about his third book, "Little did I think this work of nativities would have swollen to so great a bulk." Lily was a working astrologer, and in his autobiography he tells how he worked through some of the methods from earlier authors and found them wanting. He finished the bulk of Christian astrology in 1647, and while shut up in his house in London because of the plague, he tells us he finished the third part of the book on nativities in 7 whole weeks, during which time he buried 2 of his maidservants who died of the plague. And he says, "Yet towards November of that year, the introductions, called by the name of Christian astrology, was made public." His book is written as he speaks. You can hear his voice. And like any of us, sometimes we say the wrong thing or contradict ourselves, and you can find examples of this in Christian astrology. The second edition of Christian astrology appeared in 1659. The difference to the first edition being that the dedication to Bulstrode Whitlock, who was a prominent parliamentarian, was removed. This was probably due to Lily sensing that once again the winds of change were blowing, and it might not be advisable to be seen to support the parliamentarians. When Cromwell died, his son Richard took over as Lord Protector in 1658, but it soon became apparent the Protectorate wouldn't last, and it ended in 1659 with the restoration of Charles II in 1660. It shouldn't be thought Lily was a staunch parliamentarian through and through. We know he did work for King Charles and for other royalists during the Civil War. And in 1659, he received a medal and gold chain from the King of Sweden. Although Lily had bought his house and land in Hersham in 1652, he still spent most of his time in London and would have gone to the churches in the Strand, amongst them St. Clement Danes. However, the church we see today was not the one Lily would have recognised, as it was badly damaged in the Great Fire in 1666 and was then completely rebuilt between 1680 to 1682 to a design by Sir Christopher Wren. By this time, Lily was an old man in ill health, and he lived permanently in Walton in Hersham, and he died the following year in June 1681. St. Clement's Danes Church is now the central church for the RAF, but my favourite church is the Temple Church. And although there's no actual record as far as I'm aware that Lily worshipped here, I do think he would have attended services here, and if he would come back today, it would still be recognisable to him. Temple Church was consecrated February 1185 and avoided damage from the Great Fire in 1666. It was partially refurbished by Sir Christopher Wren, who installed the church's first organ, and it was then redecorated during the Victorian era. Wherever we walk along the Strand, we can be certain we're walking in the Master's footsteps. Thank you for listening. Bye.